Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 147, week 13 in the SEC, recorded Tuesday, November 25th, 2014. This week it's the Egg Bowl, the Iron Bowl, and Rivalry Week. Oh my! That's right, the regular season is about to wind down, and the roundtable looks back at last week's games and look ahead to 3 days full of meaningful football with both the SEC East and West up for grabs. Listen as Shane Bailey, Britton Burton, and Nick Jones take a look at this and more on tonight's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey, back to cover another week in SEC regular season play before we get to the conference championships next week. But the way we do this is we take a look ahead. We take a look back. We start with the look back. So don't get your, you know, I guess the good news is thinking about that is that look back is going to be pretty quick this week. After the slate of games that we had set up last week. So as you go through this, if you went out and worked in the yard or you ran some errands to make your wife happy, for most fans in the SEC, except for a few contingents of fans, that was the case for most of us. So we'll cover last week, we'll cover this week, and this week has got a lot of big games, a lot of playoff potential, a lot of things that can work for a bunch of different teams. So there's something to play for in almost all of these games. So we'll take a heavy dose looking ahead this week versus looking back. That's not been the norm for the last few weeks. But we do this every week. We do it from a fan's perspective. And we thank you for coming in, listening, watching, tweeting us, interacting with us. We do this SEC SRT. Remember those six little letters? You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, YouTube, anywhere you want to listen to an RSS or a podcast. If you find those little letters and type them into your search bar, you can find the way you want to listen to us. We're going to be out there. If not, please let me know what you listen to if it's not out there, because I've not heard of us not being on something, so we will try to make that happen for you. But it's not just me sitting here talking by myself. I generally get some friends of mine to join me. This week I couldn't get an Auburn guy on again. I don't know why, Britton or Nick, but so we just have the Alabama side tonight. So joining me tonight's Britton Burton. Thanks for joining me, Britton.
Happy to be here as always.
And Nick Jones from Bama Hammer. So I know you were impatiently waiting for the end of the basketball game. I guess you probably have a deadline tonight. As well. So thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, you know, people get mad when we talk about Alabama basketball on here, so we'll be quiet about that. But definitely we're trying to get this over. We're going to go write a post and then, you know, celebrate a win tonight for the first time in forever.
Yeah, well, we kicked off last week's podcast talking about basketball. I don't know why we would do something like that when Kentucky, you know, they don't have a lot of talent on that team. They're not going to be very deep. So as a Kentucky fan, you're worried about the basketball program right now. So of course we had to kick off and start talking about them from the beginning last week. But we'll hold the excitement about basketball season down a little bit, because I think everybody is invested in football, and so that's where we're going to spend the bulk of our time. As good as my Cats are right now, we're gonna wait a week or so before we can really delve into. To that round ball versus this little oblong thing that we watch every Saturday. So let me just, Nick, it's been a couple weeks since you've been able to join us, so we appreciate you being on. Just give me some look backs real quick and tell me what stood out to you about the last couple weeks, about last week, and what are you most excited about besides the Iron Bowl? We're not looking ahead. Don't look ahead yet, but what are you most excited about of what you've seen the last couple weeks?
You know, it almost feels like it was more mid-season since I've been here. It probably hasn't been that long, but, you know, looking back and seeing how things played out, although we kind of said this in the preseason that the SEC West was going to be so hard and so many teams were going to come through beat up, but just looking at it, where we're standing today, it's really played out well. I mean, you look at a little bit of a surprise. We're looking at Missouri, you know, with a chance to essentially play themselves into the SEC, you know, into the SEC championship game by winning the East. But, I mean, you look at what has happened and the way that, you know, teams like Georgia have picked up losses and how Florida, you know, has held some teams to really close games and even beaten Georgia, but at the same time, Muschamp's gone now. And that's another thing that, you know, we haven't been able to talk about is we thought in the preseason that no matter what happened to Muschamp, he would, you know, not get fired until the end of the season, which obviously didn't happen. He is being able to, you know, coach his final games out. But, and then to look at, you know, the same positions where some of these teams are, you know, we talked about how Mississippi State was going to be good, and, you know, they came into the Alabama game, gave Alabama a really close shot, really great game, something that a lot of people expected. But now at 10-1, with the way that the college football playoff is set up, they're going to be in a really tough situation, it seems like, if all the teams behind them went out to even make the college football playoff, unless they, you know, what Kirk Herbstreit said earlier tonight, blow out Ole Miss, which is, you know, Ole Miss isn't playing the best, but it's going to be really difficult. So there's still a lot of storylines, even though we're nearing the end of the season and it feels like the things are playing out, but at the same time, you know, you do have that, you know, lockup. It's either going to be Alabama or Mississippi State pretty much in the West, and, you know, Missouri and Georgia in the East. But it's coming down to the final weekend yet again, much like we saw last year in the Iron Bowl. So still a lot of great football to be played. And even if you look at a game like the Arkansas-Missouri game, or heck, even the Florida State game, big weekend down the board, even though there's a couple teams that really don't have a dog in the fight nationally. But even Kentucky, you know, playing for a bowl berth. So a lot of things to talk about. Another great week to be an SEC fan.
Britt, is there anything you want to add to that?
No, I've been on the last few weeks, so, you know, I've said my piece. So I'll just wait till we start talking about the last week's games.
Okay. You know, Nick, I like the way you tried to review some of the stuff, and I don't want to toot our horn, but I'm going to. Actually, I do want to toot our horn, because when we go back and if we listen to some of our preseason podcasts, you know, we were pretty spot on for a lot of these. We said Mississippi State was going to be able to challenge for the West. We all thought that was a possibility. There were some things that were going to have to fall into place for Mississippi State for that to happen, and it did, and they did. We also said that Auburn and Ole Miss, for the most part, Ole Miss was not deep, and they had a lot of talent. But Cole, when he was on doing our preseason Ole Miss podcast, if they start getting injuries all of a sudden, they're not very deep. In that two deep line, when we started looking at what Ole Miss had to bring to the table. And, you know, I've not seen a lot of people talk about that over the last few weeks, but I think that's really taken a toll on the way Ole Miss has been able to perform the last couple weeks and why they're sitting there with three losses now. We didn't buy into A&M. They've had flashes of brilliance. I think we were a little wrong on LSU. We also said that Arkansas was going to sneak up and beat some people that they probably shouldn't have if you looked at it head-to-head. But sooner or later, they were going to win. And now all of a sudden, you know, we'll talk about this week's game. That becomes a very important game for Arkansas all of a sudden. So, you know, on the SEC West side of the board, we were pretty spot on for the most part about what we were seeing. Even at you go all the way back to August, as we got surprised as things happened from week to week, when you look back at the SEC West as a whole, I think we were pretty good at judging what we were going to be looking at. On the East side of things, you know, South Carolina, I think, was the biggest miss for not only us, but almost everybody in the country. We all had our concerns about Vanderbilt. You know, as much as I want to see Kentucky get another win. Nobody expected Kentucky to be at 5-6. You know, we were hoping for a 3 or 4 win season looking at those guys. Tennessee, they're right where they are. They probably overachieved a little bit. They found a quarterback. which has been their saving grace the last couple weeks. You already hit on Florida and Muschamp in that situation. And up until last week, or just before he was fired, he had an opportunity to still control some destiny there in the East and have an opportunity to win the East. That's out the window for Florida now. But Missouri, again, we just didn't know what to expect. We didn't think they could recover from all those folks going to the NFL and the talent that they lost. Could they rebuild? And they're sitting there in the driver's seat in the East. So, you know, that's a good review that we really haven't done in a while on the podcast to go back and say, you know, when you look at the season as a whole, we weren't as far off base as we thought we were when you're in the trenches looking at things. Let's take a look now at some of the games from last week. And I'm just going to say these games, and if there's something you need to talk about, please let me know. But Eastern Kentucky, Florida, I mean, I don't know what you can say about some of these games. These are games you expected the outcomes to be what they are, and that's what's happened here. 52-3 win for Florida. Georgia against Charleston Southern, 55-9. Nick Chubb getting another 100-yard game. And I think the big thing there, though, is you know, you just don't have Gurley now the rest of the season. South Carolina, South Alabama, 37-12 win for South Carolina, made them bowl eligible. Nobody would have been sitting here saying they needed to beat South Alabama to become bowl eligible, because they've got Clemson this week, and who knows what can happen right now the way South Carolina's playing. And then, let's see, what else? Western Carolina and Alabama, Samford, Auburn. Anything we need to talk about any of those games before we look at some of the SEC matchups?
One thing I think worth mentioning, if you're not an Alabama fan, I'm sure you weren't watching it, but Nick, I'm sure you were watching it, and there was one point during the Alabama game where I thought all 85 scholarship players were going to get injured. The one thing you want out of games like this is to come through them healthy. You expect to win. All the scrubs that so many of these SEC teams played, you expect to win by 30 points, and you just hope you're healthy. And I believe 7 different starters left the game injured for Alabama, and not just guys. I mean, like, major players who are very important for not only beating Auburn, but, you know, winning an SEC championship, making it anywhere in the playoff. Amari Cooper, A'shaun Robinson, Cameron Robinson, guys like that. So it's something to keep an eye on. Saban has said, other than two of the least important guys are the ones that got hurt, there's not really anything to be concerned about as far as them playing going forward. But it's something to keep an eye on, and that was something that I think all Alabama fans just kind of had their hearts in their throat by the halfway point of the second quarter. And Auburn fans were probably saying, yeah, keep playing all those starters. So I don't know a whole lot about the other games, but that one had me nervous.
Yeah, and the biggest problem with Alabama, I mean, there were a couple things that went, I wouldn't say wrong, but kind of turned Western Carolina's way and kept them in the game, especially for the first quarter. And, you know, what you're talking about, Britton, is the starters were actually needed when they were playing. I mean, on into the second quarter, it was a 17-14 game. I mean, Alabama ended up extending that lead, you know, pretty heavily up until halftime. But like you said, A'shaun Robinson, Cam Robinson, and especially when Amari Cooper went down, I mean, some of those guys had dealt with injuries, and you kind of realized that, you know, Saban might hold him out after getting nicked up a little bit, because there's really no reason for him to return. But when you see Amari Cooper go down in the end zone after trying to make a catch with, you know, an apparent knee injury, I mean, it's not like your feelings are not optimistic when that happens. I don't care, you know, if it's the number one player on any team, you know, you don't like that. So I think Alabama probably escaped with 7 players going out with, you know, like you said, only 2 guys. Ardarius Stewart, a speed wide receiver that has seen an increased time, but, you know, not really that much time. And then Brian Vogler, who's primarily a blocking tight end out, and Alabama's pretty deep at tight end. So, and, you know, they might end up being able to play, but definitely not something you want to happen against Western Carolina when you're Alabama, you know, essentially taking a bye week before the Auburn game.
No, that's some excellent points. You know, when you play these, and I got on a little soapbox last week about, you know, how some of the media out there was blasting the SEC for having these matchups. And some of these matchups were set years in advance, and we're not going to go into that. Go back and listen to last week's if you want to hear my opinion on why these are still, you know, viable games for teams in the SEC and everywhere else. It's just that when you play such a tough schedule, you need, you know, there's no need for you necessarily to have to play a top 25 program out of conference every week, because you do that in week. Look at this game we're going to talk about. You know, Jim, who was on last week, tweeted out to us a great statistic on Arkansas. You know, they will have played in conference every team. When they played them, they're ranked in the top 25. Why not play some cupcake on an off week? Because you're playing eight in-conference top 25 games. You know, that says a whole lot about the depth and the quality of the SEC from top to bottom. And this is right now the bottom team in the SEC comes out and beats the number 8 team in the country, Ole Miss, and shoots a second straight shutout. So for a program like that, you do have to worry. It is a time to try to help keep them healthy and not get those big injuries. But, you know, look what, when you get to the in-conference matchups, like the few that we did have, I mean, you never know what you're going to have. And Arkansas's put themselves bowl eligible now, and the opportunity to play the ultimate spoiler next week. So,
and I know I wasn't. I know you said we weren't going to hit on this, but I wasn't here last week.
You go right ahead.
I understand what we're saying, and I understand all the points. I've read all the articles and everything, but you look at somebody like Florida State, and they're not a good sample for this, what I'm about to say, this year. But take them last year, for example. I mean, you know, they narrowly escape with a win at Boston College. They narrowly escape 2 years in a row against Wake Forest. And when you look at a team like Arkansas, I mean, granted, what was the Alabama game, 17-14 or something? I mean, that does not look good on paper when you've got now a 6-5 Arkansas team. If you take the momentum that they have right now, I mean, that was an ugly win for Alabama. You know, lesser playing conditions than desired and going on the road. I mean, you can argue that Arkansas is a better team, but at the same time, I would argue that, you know, obviously, that, you know, Arkansas has played every single conference game. The team's been ranked in the top 25 yet again this week against Missouri. And then you look at Florida State, who's obviously getting penalized because, you know, they're getting thrown down the playoff rankings even though they're undefeated. But at the same time, they're playing way too close of games for the opponents that they're playing if they want to be considered a top 4 team. So I understand the arguments, but when you play in a league like Alabama does, like any of these other SEC schools, if you're trying to make a run for the national championship, if you have to add another D1 team, because honestly, I don't know how many D1 teams would want to step in and play Alabama the week before the Iron Bowl. I mean, obviously they got Southern Miss this year and FAU, but if you want to look at a major Power 5 conference team, I mean, is a team like Baylor or anybody else going to want to step in here? Of course not, because they have their own championship hopes. So, I don't know. That was my soapbox, but anyway.
No, the answer is not to have whatever it was, 8 games or whatever, all being cupcakes. You spread those out throughout the season. Right. Only one team or two teams is going to get the benefit of having that really easy program the week before their rivalry game. And that's okay. You just need to rotate that around so that, you know, make it 2 of them, and each of those are the ones that play each other so that it's fair. You know, if you want to do something like that, and that only helps earlier in the season when we had 4 games going on between 5 and 8 o'clock start times, all going to be playing at the same exact time, where they're all games that everybody in the SEC wants to watch. I mean, and most of them are including their team. So, you know, that's going to help spread that out a little bit by putting some of these games into that rotation. I think both of those things are the answers. And you talked about Florida State, and they're talking about if Missouri were to win this Saturday, and if Missouri can upset Mississippi State or Alabama, whoever the SEC West champion is in the SEC championship game in Atlanta, would they be left out of the picture? And you sit there and you look at it, the top seven didn't change today when the rankings came out. But if you look at all the teams in there, with Missouri setting in, what, I think, are they setting at 8 or 9? I don't remember where they're setting exactly.
Nationally?
In the college football rankings.
I have 17 written down, 17. Which sounds horrible, but I'll have to check.
That could be right, you know. But theoretically, if they still have an opportunity to jump in there and possibly play, if they're going to put the weight into the conference championships and a Florida State finally loses a game that they're supposed to lose the way they've been playing, they deserve to lose. And I know I've been saying that week after week, and, you know, having to kick a field goal with in the final seconds just to win a game last Saturday. Was that Boston College that they played?
Yeah.
It
was ridiculous. I mean, you know, why are they – I know the committee is sitting there going, that would solve so many issues if they would just finally lose, because they don't deserve to be where they are except the fact that they're undefeated, and that's a huge accomplishment. But the talent that they're playing, and for them to be as good as they're supposed to be, they should be winning at a much higher margin than that. So – There's lots of solutions to this, and there's ways that I think Missouri could get into the national championship Final Four. You know, it's going to take some help from a lot of places, but sitting there listening to folks saying that they're out of it, you know, you've got Oregon could lose in the Pac-12 and be knocked out. Florida State could get knocked out. Ohio State could lose. Baylor or TCU could lose. Or both. So, you know, you get all of these things that could happen, and all of a sudden it gets wide open, and you're going to get rewarded for winning your conference championship. They've said that from the beginning. I don't believe this scenario is going to happen, but I'm sitting here listening to all these detractors and saying, well, you know, I'm looking at ways that it possibly could happen. So, you know, just be careful what you say about how this all shakes out, because that's the one thing that we don't know is how much weight are they really truly going to give conference championships? Because Jeff Long and everybody that's come out on the playoff committee and talked about it has said that the conference championship is going to mean a lot. Well, that's the only game that hasn't been played. Regular season games are being played. We can see how they're weighting those. We can see how they weight head-to-head. We can see how they weight common opponents. But we can't see conference championships, because that doesn't happen till the week after this. So, you know, there's a lot that's still going to have to be played out in the field before the Final Four is determined. And I know Mississippi State definitely doesn't want to hear that stuff.
You know, and obviously we're spending quite a bit of time on this, but this is kind of interesting just to look at it. Missouri is sitting at 17th right now. They're the lowest, or I guess highest rank, Power 5 team with 2 losses. You know, the only other 2-loss teams in the top 25 is actually Boise State, and then you've got Utah in the top 25 at 7-4. But, Shane, like you're saying, I mean, I think the most interesting thing to me, and maybe it's just because it's the first year of the college football playoff, or maybe it's because we've got what, I don't even know what the panel is, but a panel of individuals with their, you know,
12
making
now.
Decisions.
There's 12.
Well, yeah, okay. So 12 panelists or 12 people in the selection committee, and it's not a computer. It's not something that we can predict week to week. I mean, we can look at their previous decisions and, you know, hopefully, as we move along in the college football playoff, I'm sure a lot of SEC fans would love to see a little bit of consistency on how they're ranking the teams and how they're going to weight, you know, a 2-loss SEC champion or however that would happen. But at the same time, I mean, I hate to say it for Missouri, but right now, I mean, I know that they've only got 2 losses, and if they were to, you know, beat the SEC West team, that's a huge accomplishment, because either one of those teams are going to be in the top 4 going into that game. But, man, does the Indiana game just kill you right now, because it's a totally different situation. I mean, Missouri might be sitting at, you know, on the crisp of the top 5. I mean, they only have 1 loss. I mean, they have just as good of a shot as getting in as anybody else. But I don't know. That just to think about, kind of step away from the SEC for a second, the way that the college football playoff is the committee is working right now has kind of shocked me a little bit. I know it doesn't matter right now. It doesn't matter to the final week, but, you know, at least maybe it just comes with time. But when we had the BCS, we had so many people like Jerry Palm and Brad Edwards. I mean, they were predicting what the computer was going to come out with before it even happened. And now when you've got 12 individuals making their own decisions and, you know, a guy like Jeff Long and everybody else on there, it's kind of scary, but at the same time, I guess it's fun because, you know, you've got individuals who watch games instead of computers.
Britton, you're awful quiet.
I don't really have anything to add. I do think it's interesting that Jerry Palm is still doing his predictions of, you know, who will be the four in. And it's like, I mean, what, I know that you're this bracketology expert, but like Nick said, there are no metrics or, you know, there's no data really for you to consume to make these predictions. It's just kind of like, I feel like I think the 12 people in this room are going to pick this. So it's funny to me that it's hard to put any kind of stock in a projection. Not to mention, it all goes out the window when one of those four teams loses because it doesn't really matter. I guess he's making his predictions assuming that they win, but yeah. I don't know. It's interesting.
So anything we want to add? I know we went way down a rat hole when we were talking about a shutout win by Arkansas against Ole Miss. I think the injury bug is really starting to show on Ole Miss, that you're seeing some of that get thinned out, and that's going to bode well this upcoming week, I think, for Mississippi State as well, who is another team that I think by all indications is there's no reason to talk about that game either. When we were looking at the games, even though it was an SEC matchup, 51-0 shutout against Vanderbilt. You know, that season for Vanderbilt, they're going to be glad it's over next week. So,
well, from the Arkansas perspective, wow. I guess wow, I would say. I think you have to – the biggest surprise of the season – well, I don't know about the biggest surprise. One of the storylines of this season, though, is the way that defense is playing. And it's magnified now because the last 2 weeks they've won games and they've shut opponents out. But if you look back at their scores, you know, there are not – other than the A&M game is the only one that's coming to mind right now. And even that one, they played really good defensively. There are not many games where they're giving up more than 14, 17, 21 points. Who saw that coming? And, you know, if Bielema was able to field a defense like that with, let's be honest, inferior talent compared to a lot of the teams he's playing, because they're still kind of ravaged from the Petrino regime and how that ended and his lack of recruiting anyway, you know, and their ball control offense, you know, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with if they can play defense like this. I never saw this coming.
Yeah, let's take out the non-conference games like Nicholls State or Northern Illinois. They lost to Auburn 45-21. They lost to A&M 35-28. Lost to Alabama 14-13. Lost to Georgia 45-32. Lost to Mississippi State 17-10. So,
and in the last 2 weeks, 17-0 and 30-0. So they had three games where they gave up a lot of points in the conference against good teams. And then four other games where they've just been lights out defensively. And that's just, you know, I just never would have guessed that they would have that ability defensively this season.
Yeah, no. A light switch has been turned on because – on that defensive side of the ball. It's impressive.
And definitely. Go ahead, Nick. Go ahead.
I mean, this is really nitpicky, or, you know, like a really niche topic, but from an Alabama perspective, a guy like Darius Filon, who's on Arkansas's defensive line, who's really leading the way for them, you look back, and if you look into his recruiting history, he was a guy that, correct me if I'm wrong, Britton, but I'm pretty sure Nick Saban asked him to gray shirt. And he just, yeah. Nick Saban had kind of probably oversigned. He was like the 26th guy, and they had asked him to gray shirt, and he essentially flipped on National Signing Day or during that, you know, week or two window that you can flip. And he went to Arkansas, and, I mean, he dominated Alabama's offensive line that game. And coupled with their great defense that they're playing right now, that ball control offense, they're probably not going to put up 30 points a game or 40 points a game, you know, consistently, but It's just like Alabama in the past couple years previously. You know, Alabama would wear you down and only score 25 points, and you feel like you were hopeless just because the way that the defense played, coupled with, you know, that time of possession difference that, I mean, they're just going to run the clock out on you. So I guess if you're an Arkansas fan, couldn't be a better way to close the season, especially how it started out. You know, it looked a little, I wouldn't say hopeless, but especially when you're losing to Texas A&M and Arkansas in those ways, I mean, to finish out the year like this, pretty incredible.
The last game that I show, unless I missed one, which I've been known to do, is Missouri. We've already talked a little bit about them, how they get to control their fate, and you know their matchup against Arkansas this coming week is very important. But they were to come from behind a little bit at Tennessee. Were they not down at one point 16-13, I want to think? Is that, I could be wrong.
That sounds right, but I know it was very close the whole way.
No, they were up, I think. They were up 16-13. Yeah, okay. They were up 16-13 and then went on that run. But still, you know, to have Tennessee at Neyland to be down late, basically into the fourth quarter, only up three against that program. And Tennessee, you know, kind of let things slip through. Missouri started to have what Missouri does. You know, their defense just became very, very strong. What's their defensive end? He's just something else.
Shane Ray.
Yeah.
Well, they have two. So that's the – we talked last week that Missouri, at some point, we've got to start giving them some credit. And I felt like Tennessee was going to win this game going into it. And I still just – nothing is – well, I shouldn't say nothing. I'm not overly impressed by almost anything about Missouri and still don't feel that way after the Tennessee game. However, their front four is incredible, and that's why they're doing what they're doing this year. They're as talented as Matty Mauk is. He just, for whatever reason, they're limited offensively. And you know, they made some explosive plays against Tennessee, but that's not a great Tennessee defense. They're missing their best player. They're missing – three starters in the first half. The safety got to come back in the second half. So I'm just not impressed with them offensively, but their front four dominated and controlled that game from the word go. And that Tennessee offensive line that we were kind of impressed with starting once Dobbs took over the starting role, how they've kind of figured it out, or we, you know, at least played a whole lot better. They weren't giving up six sacks a game like they were early in the season, and they looked like the offensive line from early in the season. I mean, Dobbs had no time. There were no running lanes. The read option was blown up every single time. That front four absolutely controls everything about a Missouri game. And outside of that front four, I just don't think they're really special anywhere else. But that front four is so good. You know, when you have a front four that's that dominant, you can do a lot of things because you're able to play coverage and protect yourself on the back end and just allow that front four to control everything. And that's what they do. That's what they've done all season. And it was really, really on display against Tennessee.
Counting Dobbs as a rusher for Tennessee, they had 29 carries for 53 yards. And it's all because of that front four you were just talking about.
Do you have the sack numbers in front of you? I know they had a number of sacks too, which is part of the reason that yardage is so low.
I'll pull it up. Dobbs' stats real quick.
And while you're doing that, see. Shane, one of the most, you know, we've talked about how Matty Mauk has a lot of natural talent. And we've seen a lot of glimpses of glory for him. But, I mean, just listen to some of these stats, and it's crazy to me that he almost feels like a liability in my mind back there at times. I mean, no doubt he can make any throw on the field, but, you know, I guess that speaks volume to maybe the coaching and how that front four is playing, because 52% completion percentage, 21 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. He's been sacked 18 times, a QBR of just 51. That's not impressive play. And you think about it, he is their playmaker on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, they have Hansborough, I think his name is, their running back. He's pretty good. But they don't have, you know, DGB and a guy like Washington on the outside. They don't have those skill players that they're used to having. I mean, Bud Sasser's pretty good, but he's just a step down from that NFL talent that they've had in the past. So that defense is getting it done for him right now, and, you know, once again, coaching's getting them there. So I'm kind of with Britton. I think we've maybe us not giving them enough credit is kind of speaking to us kind of waiting for them to trip up, but I kind of thought this Tennessee game might be one that they would too, but come out with a victory.
ESPN's not easily letting me find that stat still. So,
well, I have a theory on Missouri, and it may be better saved for next week, but if they don't make the SEC championship, we won't talk about it, so I'll go now. You know, Missouri built, and A&M did this as well, but Missouri obviously built their team to play in the Big 12. And it's the Big 12 up and down is a spread offense league. It's a four wide receiver league. You build your defense to rush the passer. And they came into the SEC at the perfect time because the SEC is in the midst of transitioning to that. All of college football is in the midst of transitioning to that. But there are very few, you know, traditional line the ball up, two tight ends, run the ball at you teams left. Even Alabama this year, if you watch Alabama, they're essentially a spread offense. They don't have that mentality that they've had under Saban. It's basically Arkansas and Georgia. And so Missouri is recruited to play this style of defense. They have lightning quick, smaller guys, especially in that front four, that are able to dominate these teams that are transitioning to the spread. But a team like Georgia, who does line it up and pound it at you, we saw what Georgia did to them. That Missouri was completely helpless against them. But there just aren't that many teams in the SEC doing that anymore. Now they're going to play the other team that does that this week. So it's going to be really interesting because I think we saw what their kryptonite is when a team like Georgia with two outstanding tailbacks, a very solid veteran offensive line, what they can do to a quick defense that takes advantage of these spread offenses. So that's a theory that I'm working on, and if Arkansas runs for 50 yards, then I'll be completely wrong and we'll just forget about this. But that's what I'm working on anyway.
But this is a great week to test that hypothesis.
Yeah.
Anything we want to say or talk about before we look at this week's slate of games? All right, then. I'll take your silence as we've got games in 2 days.
Yes, this is a beautiful, wonderful week. It's all spread out Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all great games, all implications for postseason playoff, SEC championships. It's, you know, it's kind of that last weekend of glory for football fans because championship weekend, there's only a handful of games, and then the bowls are all stretched out. You've only got a couple of games a day. So you got to soak it up over holiday weekend, find a way to ditch your family, get a TV, get an iPad, however you have to do it.
Call in sick, right?
Call in sick, skip work, find a way to love football because this is your last weekend to really, really embrace all of its wonderfulness.
Well, we start off with the LSU at A&M. Wow, I didn't think. I mean, did we think that this is the game would be the way it would be? I mean, both are sitting at 7-4. The loser potentially could be the last in the SEC West.
Yeah, how about that?
I mean, if A&M loses, no, if LSU loses and Arkansas wins, they go to last in the SEC because they'll have identical records, and Arkansas had beat LSU. I'm looking. I've not seen any tiebreakers to make sure my theory's not correct here, but that would it would seem to think that a three-way tie, they go head-to-head records, and now all of a sudden LSU's at the bottom.
Yeah, I think that's right. Texas A&M wouldn't because they beat Arkansas head-to-head, but I think you're right. And who would have thought, you know, before the season that we would be saying that? You know, it's just shocking to see how inept LSU has been offensively. And really, for both teams, this is a I would say this is kind of a season salvaging type of game. You know, if LSU finds a way to win this and they go 8-4, and the same for Texas A&M, you go 8-4, you go out on a high note in the SEC and beat a team with a name that you recognize. it's obviously you haven't accomplished what you set out to and what you thought you would before the season began, but at least you don't have this horrible taste in your mouth from the way that things have kind of gone. It feels...
Gives you something to like build on.
Game. Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, all of a sudden, if you win this game, if you're LSU or Texas A&M, now your preparation for the bowl game means something. If you lose this game... I think if it's LSU, I know their head won't be in it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, you're right. And A&M has been so erratic. We don't know what to expect from them. You know, if we get from them what we had a couple weeks ago, they could destroy LSU.
This is at Kyle Field, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's the thing that we've talked about. A&M cannot seem to win these big games at home. They went on the Ritz, the strangest thing. You know, can they get a big win? And this year, it feels weird to say, but it is beating LSU a big win. I don't know. They're so inept offensively. But when you've struggled the way they have at home, it's a big win.
Yeah, I mean, where LSU has a strength, they're going to each play to each other's strengths in this matchup. If I had to pick, I'm going LSU just because I have more faith in Les Miles right now than what I've seen from A&M consistently throughout the year. But Sumlin can coach a big game. So, gosh, that's a...
No doubt about it, and something that Britton just pointed out, I think the Vegas is kind of showing their distrust in Texas A&M. I mean, Shane, the way that you're talking, it almost sounds kind of like a pick 'em, but LSU's catching 3 on the road, which is really 6, you know, counting in the +3 for Texas A&M. So, I don't know. I mean, this could quickly turn in either situation. I mean, if LSU wins the game, we're kind of expecting, you know, no more than 30 points from Texas A&M. I don't even know if LSU could, you know, score 33 points. But at the same time, I mean, if Texas A&M, I mean, LSU does have a pretty decent defense. But, you know, away from home at Kyle Field, if Texas A&M plays it the way that, you know, they're capable of, I mean, they could easily put 30-plus points on the board. So, I don't know. It's a really hard game to predict. Like you said, I think, you know, if you're looking for something to trust, I mean, you kind of think Les Miles, big game. But at the same time, going back to last year, which I guess isn't as good of a comparison now, but someone in big games has proven he can win too.
Well, I think that, you know, it's a little easy to overreact to how LSU played against Arkansas, but if you think to the way that they lost to Alabama the week before, just the emotional gut punch that was. I don't know if it's shocking that they came in and were playing an Arkansas team that's fired up, more talented than we thought, definitely knew all season long they were going to get one of these games. And it's a rivalry game for Arkansas. They hate LSU. They want the boot, you know, all that stuff. I think maybe it's not as shocking that they were kind of flat and emotionally dead. And Les Miles, you know, it's easy to make fun of the guy, but when you're digging his grave, he tends to find a way to win a game like this that you think, how in the world are they going to win? They literally can't complete a forward pass, and he finds ways to win games like that. And so, I'm kind of agreeing with you that I think that if I'm putting money on anything, it's Les Miles just finds a way to win games that his program needs to feel good about themselves, to build on something that the fan base needs to not want to burn his house down. He seems to find a way to win games like that, and that's kind of what I'm expecting again this week.
And you made a really good point, and we talked about that. You know, when the Alabama LSU game was getting ready to happen, when we did our preview for that week, that was going to be a very physical game, and that set Arkansas up because LSU was going to come into that game beat up and either on an emotional high, so they're going to maybe take them for granted if they won. If they would have lost against Alabama, which they would, they could have been deflated and beat up and not ready for Arkansas. I don't think that'll be the case for the A&M game. It just depends on what A&M program we have show up for those guys. And then we get to turn around the next day. And this one, I mean, all of a sudden, if you look at some of the rivalry games, even though this isn't, this is a fairly new rivalry, if you want to call it one, Arkansas at Missouri. But implications, this one has it just as big implications as the Iron Bowl and the Egg Bowl this year. And if your theory is correct, Britton, Georgia's got to be sitting there definitely rooting for the Hogs.
Yeah, I mean, they were having to root for the Big Orange last week, and that didn't work out too well for them. But, yeah, I mean, we talked about it a little bit, so I won't spend a ton of time on it. If you're a Georgia fan, and if my theory has any merit at all, you got to be a little bit excited, because if there's any team that's going to come out and pound you up the gut and play action you to death with tight ends and be a powerful team, it's Arkansas. And if this Missouri defense that is so good against the more finesse teams is susceptible to getting beat by being gut punched and pounded up the middle, man, this is the team to do it.
Yeah, Brent, I think you're exactly right, and that's going to be the thing to watch is, you know, can Missouri defend against a hard nose, come at you, run downhill offense that they don't see every day? And if they can't, I mean, it's going to be a rough day, and I think we end up seeing Georgia in the SEC championship. But this is a pick 'em in Vegas, so the way that Arkansas is playing right now, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, obviously Missouri wouldn't want to play hardly any SEC West team trying to get to the SEC championship game, but I mean, even Arkansas right now is a tough go. If you got to win one game, line up and face them. I mean, it's one of the hottest teams in college football.
It's a pick 'em because nobody wants to bet for either team. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
It's just like that's not where I would put my money, you know. But I'm just being silly there.
On CBS Sports, they actually have Arkansas favored by two, so that's interesting. And,
oh, really?
You know, the other thing is, with this being in Missouri, you would obviously you lean towards the home team, and that's the one thing. If it were in Fayetteville, I would almost guarantee that Arkansas wins this. But the thing about this being in Missouri is the way that Arkansas plays. They used to always say this about Alabama back in the AJ McCarron, the Chance Warmack, the great offensive line on that run that they were on. The way that a team like that plays offense travels really, really well, because you don't have to do a lot of fancy lining up, communicating, a lot of ball handling. The crowd noise impact is minimized greatly when you're able to turn around and hand the ball off and get 5 yards.
Yeah, it's run left, run right, or run down the middle.
Yeah, student body left, student body right. Old Bill Walsh college football. So, you know, I'm kind of over saying Missouri's not good and they're not going to win this game, because I think I've done that every single week. I've expected them, after the Indiana loss anyway, I've picked whoever they're playing against.
But they can be good and still lose.
That's true. I expect this to be a really, really good game. I think it's going to be low scoring. I don't think Missouri's going to have much success offensively either. I think it's going to be a slobber knocker 17-10 type of game. The only way I see it being different is if they just get bludgeoned to death by Arkansas's run game and it gets out of hand, and they're just not able to recover.
And what's great about the SEC is, if you looked at our previews, we gave zero credence to this game, but now all of a sudden, this is going to be one of the most watched games. Overall, that Friday game, it sets up perfect, because it's not against the Egg Bowl, it's not against the Iron Bowl, and it's got huge implications for everybody. It depends on who Alabama or Mississippi State's going to get to play. It depends on, is Georgia going to get in or not, or is it going to be Missouri? And then if Arkansas does win this game, think about it, to win three SEC games to close out their season and end up 7-5, that's huge, and just puts the SEC West in a position where I'm so glad that Kentucky's still in the East.
Yeah, before the season started, I think we looked at this and said, I can't believe Arkansas-Missouri is the only SEC game on Friday. That sucks. And now it's like, man, I can't wait for that 2:30 Arkansas-Missouri game.
Yep. And now Spurrier, I forgot what his record is against Dabo and the Tigers in Death Valley, but he's got a pretty good record. What's he, 5-0, 6-0 against?
definitely undefeated. Well, however long he's been there, because they play him every year. He's been there 7 years, hasn't he? Or maybe even eight. He's undefeated. I know that.
Is that in jeopardy this year?
Nick, you want to take that one?
I was just sitting here while we were discussing the other games, but there are so many question marks for Clemson right now, and I don't, you know, even claim to be up on ACC football very much, but I know that it was either last week or 2 weeks ago, they sent their quarterback who's been starting a couple games. I think he had like an MCL sprain or something. They sent him out there with a cast of some sort on his throwing hand to play football, to play quarterback. And when I saw that, I was just like, okay, does this mean, like, is Cole Stout that bad, you know, your backup quarterback or what? I think the starter's name is Watson or something. I can't even remember. But I don't know, because you have to think that the old ball coach is going to look for, you know, yet another win at Clemson, and he's proven that they can win there. But I think it's kind of like we were talking about with Texas A&M. I mean, South Carolina started out with a huge upside. You know, they've won some games they shouldn't have. But then again, I mean, 6-5, not the season that they wanted to, you know, come out with. But, hey, if you beat Clemson to end the season, finish with 7 wins, I mean, something to hang your hat on. So, well,
before the last 3 years when they were having 10-win seasons, the only thing that mattered at South Carolina was this game, beating Clemson.
Exactly.
And so for that reason, and Spurrier knows that, he said that, you know, for South Carolina, a lot of individuals, they could care less if we won the SEC East. They want us to beat Clemson. So I see him throwing out all the stops. Anything and everything he's got in his repertoire, if he needs to use it, he's going to use it Saturday morning.
Yeah, I have no idea how to – that's why I threw Nick onto the sacrificial altar there, because I just don't know what to think. This Clemson team is not as good as they've been. You know, the one thing you can always count on is South Carolina beats Clemson. But this South Carolina team, they're just not that good. And, you know, we said before the Florida game, you know, the South Carolina team's not that good. Of course, neither was Florida. But Spurrier, if there's a game he's going to win, it's this one. And he's going to find a way to break the hearts of the people in the swamp. And for 59 and a half minutes, we looked like we were wrong. And then miraculously, he finds a way. And so I guess that logic applies here. Like, I have no faith in the personnel and anything about what South Carolina puts out on the field, but they don't ever lose to Clemson. It's kind of like at the beginning of the season, Blair talked about Mississippi State never beats LSU. Well, he turned out to be wrong, but until they did beat LSU, he's like, I can't pick Mississippi State to beat LSU. And I guess that's what I have to default to here. I don't think Clemson's good. I don't really think South Carolina's that good. But until I see Clemson beat South Carolina, you know, I'm going to pick South Carolina. And if South Carolina does win, that's yet another nail in the coffin of Florida State's, you know, supposed belonging in the top four, because yet another one of their ranked, in air quotes, wins would then no longer be a ranked win.
Yeah, and you know, you look at South Carolina, they have two notable wins, Florida in overtime, and then they beat Georgia. And none of us saw that coming the way Florida or South Carolina played the first couple weeks. And so they looked like a totally different program when they played Georgia. So if that program can show back up this Saturday, you know, I think you guys are right. I'm going with South Carolina. Even, you know, Clemson's, I think, giving them 4.5. Is that what you see, Nick?
I didn't have that one written down, but I think that sounds about right.
Yeah, that's what CBS has.
So, you know, I mean, you always give that 3 points. That's 7.5.
Yeah.
So they're favoring South Carolina on a neutral field by a touchdown. That's crazy.
Yeah, that feels like found money to me. But I don't know. I don't bet, because I feel like I would lose a lot. So
yeah. Well,
whenever it seems easy, it's not usually.
I can logically make all of them sound good.
Yeah, you talk yourself into any bet.
That's right. Georgia Tech, and you know, it's the 16th team in the nation, 9-2. for Georgia Tech. I still don't see that being a problem for Georgia right now. I think they're starting to play on all cylinders. Except that passing game still suspect, but you know, with the run game to support it, I don't see that being much of an issue this time.
That's my question. Georgia Tech has been, and I know it's the ACC, but Georgia Tech has been pretty solid defensively, especially against the run. So if they are able to, they're not going to stop Georgia completely running the ball, but if they're able to at least force, you know, Hudson Mason to make a few plays from the pocket, I'm still not sold that he can do that against above average defenses, and I think Georgia Tech is an above average defense. And, you know, we've talked about it with these triple option teams. It's always just a pain in the butt to play these teams. Now, Georgia's probably better suited for it than anyone else in the SEC because they play Georgia Tech every year. This is, I don't know, Paul Johnson's probably been there 6-7 years, somewhere in there, maybe not quite that long, but he's been there a while. So Georgia has seen this offense several years in a row. But, you know, you just never know. You see teams struggle against the Navies and the Air Forces of the world, and Georgia Tech's doing it with better athletes. So I would still pick Georgia. It's in Athens, so it's always tough to win, you know, between the hedges. But I think Georgia Tech just has enough juice on defense to make Hudson Mason make some plays through the air to win. So it's going to be, can he do it?
Yeah, I think you guys are right. I mean, one of the things that, you know, going back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the podcast, I mean, just for fun, let's look at this matchup because Georgia Tech is essentially locked up. I think they actually have locked up the Coastal Division, the other side of the ACC. They're going to be playing Florida State no matter what happens in this game. And then you've got Georgia who, you know, barring, you know, depending on if Missouri takes care of business, could find themselves on the other side of the West champion. So, I don't know. It's just fun for me to watch. I mean, you know, see how those teams stack up because it's the ACC's second best team against the SEC's, you know, possibly fourth or fifth best team, so depending on who you ask. But I don't know. I mean, it's always such a hard game to predict anytime you play one of these, you know, triple option style, teams, because Georgia's got there's so many things, especially when you don't see it and you can't duplicate it in practice. I mean, I would tend to pick Georgia in this game, especially with the way that Nick Chubb is, you know, running. But Hudson Mason is the question mark. I mean, we've seen him win games for Georgia, but at the same time, I still don't think he's ready to shoulder, you know, a late fourth quarter drive to win the game. So if it's close, you know, maybe watch out for Georgia Tech. But if they've got it locked up in the fourth quarter, I mean, I think Georgia probably pulls out the win.
And the other thing that Georgia has going for them, in my opinion, is they've got nothing to win or lose here. Unless they, of course, get blown out by Georgia Tech. But they're going to know if they're the SEC East champs or not before they hit the field.
That's a good point.
And if they lose this game as the SEC, or going into this game, it doesn't affect them being the SEC East champs. What it can affect them is their ranking in the college football Final Four. So there is some potential there, but they're still going to Atlanta either way if Missouri loses. So from that standpoint, you know, they should be coming in pretty loose. And to come against a triple option team like that, that only bodes well for Georgia. So that's tea leaf right there, and that's who knows. But that's a psyche that I would think would have to come into play. All right, so I'm going to get your all's opinion first before I weigh in. The next game I have on my slate is Kentucky at Louisville.
Go ahead, Nick.
I was looking at this game, and I knew, you know, Shane would be all into this, but I'm at Louisville, the 22nd ranked team, 8-3 coming in. They played Florida State pretty tough, but it's kind of hard to judge, you know, what that looks like. I think this shapes up pretty well for Kentucky to, you know, hopefully get bowl eligible. I mean, as an SEC fan, you're probably rooting for them. But at the same time, Louisville's secondary, you know, is playing pretty well. I think they've got one of the nation's best safeties back there, who's up there in the top in interceptions. I don't know. I mean, Louisville is favored by, what I wrote down, 12.5 points. That seems kind of high to me. But
that's what I got.
I don't know. I want to say Kentucky, but obviously a lot of the experts don't want to say that. So I don't know. I mean, it's a winnable game for Kentucky, but I would probably say Louisville just because I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell where Kentucky is and how they're going to play in this game, but at the same time, I don't know that much about Louisville either. So don't put too much credence in my prediction.
I was a little surprised that the line is 12.5 as well. I guess Vegas is saying Kentucky has looked pretty bad in a few games here down the stretch, so they're counting on that being a downward trend. That safety you mentioned has 13. I don't know if he's a safety or a corner, but whatever he is, he has 13 interceptions. That is, I don't know what the
that's all-time more than some record. Teams.
Yeah, I think that's more than Alabama. I mean, I don't know what the all-time record is, but that's got to be close. That's just remarkable. The other storyline, and Shane, you probably know better than me. Isn't Louisville's quarterback hurt?
That I don't know.
I thought I heard that like last week or 2 weeks ago, and that may have just been a one-week thing. They also weren't – it's not like he was setting the world on fire. So Kentucky absolutely has every chance to win this game. I don't know how much of a home field advantage Louisville really is, but you know, if Louisville is not great defensively, and if they get – the one thing I think they can do that we saw if you watch that Florida State game, they can rush the passer pretty well, but – if Kentucky can get that quarterback run game going, I'm not sure that they can withstand that. So, you know, I don't know that I would pick Kentucky, but they certainly I would lean more towards this being a toss up than a, you know, a 12.5 point line for Louisville.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't want to be a homer here. I'm rooting for Kentucky. I think they've got a really good opportunity to win this game. I mean, but you look at it, Louisville can be a good football program. But you also look at the fact that they did lose to that Clemson program we were just talking about, 23-17. They lost to a Virginia program that's already got six losses under their belt, 23-21. You know, that's two of their three losses. But then they've got wins against Notre Dame, 31-28 just last week. So you've got an erratic program here that you don't know sometimes what you're going to get from week to week. There will be a lot of blue in the stands, even though it's in Louisville. There's a lot of Kentucky fans that live in Louisville. It's only 45 minutes from Lexington. You know, but you're looking at StubHub, and there's 1,000 seats available still, and I don't expect it to be a sellout. For a rivalry game, you know, could you imagine the Iron Bowl not being sold out, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Exactly. So, you know, the Louisville fan base doesn't seem to have a rooting interest in supporting the programs, which only bodes well for Kentucky. Kentucky's defense has got to finally show back up. I know that when we look at their season and early in the season, Kentucky didn't play the same programs that they did the latter half of their season. It got a lot tougher. But they had some pretty good programs that they came up against. South Carolina, at times that we've talked about them, you know, they beat a Georgia program. So at times South Carolina can be good. They took Florida's defense, who has a good defense, and they took them to triple overtime before they lost. So Kentucky needs to find something. You know, Stoops' press conference, it was great. They were asking him, you know, would this if you could become bowl eligible against your in-state rival, would that mean more to you? He goes, no, I just need to get a win. You know, it doesn't matter who it's against. And that needs to be the mentality. It doesn't need to be a rivalry game, because if you look at it, it's not really been a rivalry game. It's an in-state rival. That's it. But Louisville has got the win-loss. They've had the better program for a number of years. So it's not really a rivalry game in Kentucky's eyes to me. It just needs to be another game, and it's a team that they can beat. Afterwards, if they can come away with the win, it's all that much sweeter that it's the in-state rival that they were able to beat. But this is just another program that they have to be able to beat to get to that next level, because a young program like Kentucky getting the extra time, I don't care if they get to go to the BBVA Compass Bowl or the – a Bell Helicopter Bowl or the Ponzietta Bowl or whatever bowl they get to go to. it doesn't matter in Kentucky's eyes. What's going to matter is that extra time they get with those players, because that could mean a huge amount of growth between in the off season for this program. And so it's a big, huge hurdle. But as a Kentucky fan and someone looking at the program, no one expected them to be in this position. So we're playing with house money right now at 5 wins. I think they Vegas had them as their over under for wins was 3.5 maybe. If I'd have to go back and look at that, but I want to say that's the number that was that Vegas had for them in total wins. So we're playing with the Cats are playing with house money. Louisville has shown that they can be beat, and they can be beat by an inferior program. So it really depends on can Kentucky's defense decide to show back up, because they've not been able to stop anything. They haven't been able to stop the run. They haven't been able to stop the pass. Their run game has been somewhat inefficient, so they're going to have to find ways to get that up and moving. And if they can do some of those things, they've got a chance. But I can't sit here today and go, yeah, book it. They're going to win this. The program's not there yet.
All right. Yeah.
All right. Florida at Florida State.
Well, this is a pretty big game, huh? I mean, is there anyone in the country, SEC fan or not, that's not rooting for Florida here?
The folks in Jacksonville. That's it.
Other than Florida State fans, of course.
And maybe some of them are not.
Yeah, I mean, this is the best chance for a second SEC team to get in. I think Ohio State's going to win out, and I think either Baylor or TCU, one of the two of them will win out, and both of those teams would probably wind up jumping a Mississippi State, even if they have a one loss. Especially with Ole Miss going down to Arkansas the way they did, Mississippi State's just not going to be able to have a really impressive win in the Egg Bowl if they can win that game. So, you know, if you're an SEC homer and you want to get two teams in, to me this is your best chance. And Florida State has been living on the edge all season long against inferior competition. This is, again, inferior competition. Let's not kid ourselves and pretend like this is a great Florida team, but they do have a really good defense. And Florida State's defense is not really that good. They're just nothing special this year. They're certainly nowhere near what they were last year. So can Florida find enough offense? You know, teams have jumped on Florida State all year long. Can Florida find enough offense to get a lead in the first half? And then is their defense good enough to do what no other team has been able to do this year, and that's hold Florida State off in the second half? I think this is probably the best defense Florida State will have seen. And, again, I don't know that I could pick Florida here, but
it sure would be nice.
It sure would be nice, and Florida State is ripe for the pick, and what a great way it would be for Muschamp to go out.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, looking at the way that Florida season shaped up 3 weeks ago, if I would have said, you know, they've got Florida State at the end of the year. I mean, even though we knew Florida State's been playing some close games, I mean, it doesn't have the implications that we think it does now. I mean, we're kind of, I know some of this is fabricated, but at the same time, when you're Florida State, you got to win out no matter what. Rivalry game, you got a coach who has nothing to lose, has already lost it. So hopefully you want to see some players like Mike Jones in the backfield. And Florida, you know, all the Florida players, Fowler and all those guys, you know, play for their coach one more game at least. I'm like you guys. If I had to pick somebody, I would probably pick Florida State just because they've demonstrated this year that they know how to win late in games. And when you've got, hate him or not, when you've got Jameis Winston in the backfield, if you got to win a game, there might not be a better quarterback to do that, especially in the waning minutes of the fourth quarter. So, I mean, being in Tallahassee definitely helps this game, but I don't know. I mean, if you're Jimbo Fisher, Florida State, kind of like what we were talking about with Missouri, you know, having to win out. I mean, you love controlling your own destiny, but, I mean, this is a rough game because Florida has nothing to play for, and you've got everything to play for. So anytime it sets up like that, it's a rough go.
No, you guys are right. And only thing I'm going to add is that, you know, this team, this Florida team, has really not given up on Muschamp. Even, you know, going into knowing he was losing his job and the way they played last week, this team still likes playing for Muschamp. So what better way to send him out to a new defensive coordinator position somewhere else next year than to put a loss in Florida State's column? So I'm going to love to watch this game. It's going to be one of those where you're going to have to be flipping back and forth, because it starts the same exact time as the Egg Bowl. And so I think Vegas kind of agrees, because they're only giving Florida State 7.5. You know, so that they believe Florida still is a good program. You know, they've got a chance there. So that's going to be a fun game to watch. There's going to be that Florida team's going to come out loose.
And you know it's going to come down to, I mean, Florida State has literally won every game with a last-second drive or a stop on a last-second drive or a field goal at the end. I mean, you know it's going to come down to something crazy at the end.
And I could see it, and it could just be my mind playing tricks on me, because I'm not high on Florida State right now, but I could see an absolute beatdown where there's no chance of recovery from Florida, because they're going to come out flying, playing loose. This is their bowl game for their coach. You know, what better way to support and show your coach that you're 100% behind him than just coming out and dominating? And they have it in them. It hasn't truly happened for four quarters for Florida yet this season. So let's see what happens then. But that does set us up for let's get the Egg Bowl. We won't cover it just yet, even though I teed it up. But Tennessee Vanderbilt. All I can say here is Tennessee becomes bowl eligible, and it just grates me.
Yeah, Tennessee better. Can you imagine if they lose this game?
Oh my gosh. Could I imagine it? There would be Tennessee fans jumping off cliffs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have your chance to beat Missouri and not have any pressure in this game. Obviously, Missouri is a much better team. That's a much more difficult thing to do. They didn't do it, so now all the pressure is on beating Vanderbilt. Gosh, it would just be just a brutal loss. But if you have watched Vanderbilt play, they do not have a pulse. They barely even came to the stadium for the Mississippi State game. I don't see any possible way that Tennessee loses the game.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, hatred for Tennessee coming out a little bit. I mean, I will admit that, you know, Butch Jones has that program headed in the right direction, even though they've caught some tough breaks this year. And we talked about earlier in the season how hard it was going to be for them to succeed with just so much youth. And it's pretty amazing the things that they've done with, you know, Jalen Hurd and Josh Dobbs coming off in relief of Worley, and that offensive line, and just so many other guys that, especially not just freshmen, but important freshmen that are contributing so early, which is impressive. But, you know, I mean, this isn't the same Tennessee-Vanderbilt game. I know that sounds weird to say, that we've seen in the past couple of years under James Franklin. I mean, like Britton said, I mean, last week it was just, you couldn't even watch that game unless you're a Mississippi State fan. I mean, I flipped on it just to kind of check in, see how Vandy matched up, and, well, they didn't match up at all. So
I think even Mississippi State fans watched a better game that day.
I think so, too. So anyway, I just don't think there's any way that they dropped this game. But, you know, we can always hope, and it might be worth tuning over just to see what the score is.
And you look at, well, you just watch the ticker, and if it all of a sudden becomes competitive, you flip. But I don't even waste the time to flip at that point. I would be flipping between, because then you're losing out on Florida, Florida State, or Mississippi State, Ole Miss. So one thing that surprised me about last week is that Vanderbilt did show up and play as poorly as they did. You know, I thought they were starting to put some things together to do things the right way. And I was hoping to at least them come out and make an effort and improve on that and work on those things last week. But did they have two to three quarterbacks in again last week? So they went back to their old ways again, and it was deflating. to see that, because I was hoping for a Vanderbilt to come in and steal a victory there and not be shut out in the SEC. But, you know, I think that's all we really need to talk about with that game. But we do have the Egg Bowl, Mississippi State. I don't know. It's saying Mississippi State minus two, and I just think that Mississippi State's going to be, I don't know, at least a 10-point win. I've just not been impressed with Ole Miss the last couple weeks, and I think they're headed down a slippery slope that they can't come back from.
Yeah, to me, it's really surprising that's a 2-point line. I mean, it's in Oxford, so I guess they're saying if it was in Starkville, it'd be a 5-point, you know, Mississippi State would be a 5-point favorite. But if you've watched Ole Miss play, and last week before the Arkansas game, we said with Laquon Treadwell out, their kind of overall lack of a running game all year, you're putting this on Bo Wallace now. And that's a scary proposition. I think Jimmy's actually the one that said it, the Arkansas fan. And we saw what can happen when it's on Bo Wallace's shoulder. I mean, the good Bo, bad Bo conversation kind of went away for much of this season, but bad Bo reared his ugly head in such a way on Saturday as if to make that entire lack of conversation be forgotten all year. Bad Bo was epically bad Bo. And I kind of just think that's what they are right now. Laquon Treadwell was such a weapon on the outside. They don't have a running game they can lean on. They've got some other talented guys at the receiver position, but no transcendent talents. No, you know, first two rounds of the draft, NFL draft talents. And because of that, you're putting it on Wallace, and their defense is banged up. It's not what it was, you know, halfway through the season. It's just hard for me to see this working out very well for this Ole Miss team.
The aspect that it is the Egg Bowl and a rivalry game, I think, could keep it close. I mean, emotions are going to be running high. It's definitely something to play for, because otherwise, you know, Ole Miss has kind of seen their team go from the top four all the way down to really having nothing to play for other than, you know, maybe a Sunshine Bowl or, you know, being in Miami as opposed to, you know, where else. But I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of with Britton. I think, like Britton said, not only putting that on Bo Wallace, but at the same time seeing the tough time that Alabama had, even at home, facing Mississippi State. I mean, that front seven is for real. I mean, I know we've seen them play, but I wanted to – I mean, not to be pretentious or anything, but I wanted to see them stack up against, you know, one of the better offensive lines in the SEC and a team that, you know, knows how to play downhill football. Granted, Alabama was coming off the LSU game, but I mean, if you cannot run the ball against Mississippi State even a little bit, and I mean, unless with Treadwell, it's a little bit of a different story, but not to mention you take out, you know, arguably the best or one of the best wide receivers in the SEC out of this game completely. I think definitely that front four, and even, you know, mixing up some linebacker blitzes, it's going to be tough for Bo Wallace, especially coming out of the gates to open up this game. I mean, if Jaylen Walton or somebody can get out in space, you know, they may be able to score some points. But, I mean, if Mississippi State gets the chance to put the boot to the throat, it might happen early, and Ole Miss will not have a chance to come back. I mean, in these rivalry games, you kind of have to throw out everything, probably, like we'll talk about in the Iron Bowl just in a second, but I don't know. I mean, I think the line is extremely low, too. I mean, that's a 7-to-10-point game off the bat, and I could easily see, you know, Mississippi State winning by two touchdowns if it gets out of hand.
Yeah, you said put your foot on your boot on the neck. Well, it's a rivalry game, and you know that if that were to happen, that they're not going to let up. They're going to keep coming back, and it won't be pretty.
Right.
And the other thing that's in Mississippi State's advantage is look what they walked through last week at Vanderbilt. I mean, with the starters only played a half, basically, and Ole Miss was up against that destroying defense from Arkansas. So, you know, what they basically had was a practice, the Bulldogs did, versus Ole Miss, who you know, got beat up a little more. And it's a team that's already banged up. So you're just getting more dings and dents in that program. And coming around and having to play a team that should be fairly healthy and on the other side of the ball. All right, now it's the game that, that you guys have been with me for an hour and a half for almost, so you can talk about. I'm going to just be quiet and let you two talk. Nick, go first.
Well, you know, I mean, coming back from last year's game, it's a tough loss, and just listening to the way that the media is obviously trying to make a story out of it, but it's fun to hear not only Nick Saban and all the players earlier this week they were saying, you know, how much does this play into it, but Saban has really gotten the players to buy into this year of this next game, next win, playoff mentality, essentially ever since they lost the game against Ole Miss, because you know, once it was apparent that Alabama would control their own destiny, nothing was every game was special, even the Western Carolina game. But you look at this matchup, I mean, Auburn's defense, I just don't know. I mean, I hate to use the word atrocious, but it is not good at all. And that is probably the biggest wild card in this game, because Alabama's offense at times, especially in Bryant-Denny Stadium, has looked incredible. But then they go on these cold streaks, and that's a chance for especially a team like Auburn who can, you know, capitalize, especially with their running attack, on these lulls where Alabama's may not be able to score points to be able to take advantage of that. But I don't know. If you dare to compare the way that Alabama and Auburn are coming into this game, Alabama's coming off two huge wins and, you know, a seeming bye week last week, and Auburn's coming in kind of beaten up. They're getting Duke Williams back, but nobody's really sure if he's going to be 100%. But I just don't know. I mean, Cameron Artis Payne is quietly leading the SEC, 1,400 yards. You can't discount that. Nick Marshall is a much better, more developed passer than he was last year, and we saw how that game ended. And I think, you know, Saban did make an interesting point in his press conference this week that although Alabama lost on the final, you know, play of the game, they held Auburn to 21 points for most of the game on the road, which was pretty impressive considering, you know, how explosive Auburn's offense was. And with some of those pieces missing on the offensive line, a couple guys that they've, you know, lost on the defensive line as well, I'm hesitant to say, but I mean, I feel a lot better about this game than I did last year. Obviously, Auburn is, you know, a much, you know, not nearly as good as they were last year, but the line set, what I'm seeing about 9.5, I mean, it would be risky to put it at a 10-point game, but I think if Alabama wins, I would expect it to be around 10 points. Now, if Auburn wins, you know, all bets are off, but I don't know. With the way that Alabama is playing, this defense has really matured under Saban, and Bryant-Denny has been lights out. I mean, I've been going to Bryant-Denny for nearly 10 years that I can remember, and I know that's not a very long time, but it's all the Saban era, and I've never seen a more inspired defense. They're not the most talented defense, definitely on the outside, definitely in the secondary they're not, but the Mississippi State game at Bryant-Denny Stadium, I don't know if you guys talked about that, but that was the craziest game I've ever been to. I mean, that was, when I think about Death Valley, I still don't think it compares to Death Valley, but that is something that it might be in that league. So with Auburn coming in, Alabama playing for an SEC championship berth, it's going to be a live stadium. And obviously from the Alabama perspective, I hope we can pull it out. But like I said, all bets are off. Hard to predict this game, but in my opinion, I'd say Alabama by about the line, probably around 10.
So I think the biggest difference between last year and this year, and we've talked a lot about it throughout the season, especially on the Auburn side, is the difference in the matchup in the trenches when Auburn has the ball and Alabama's on defense. Alabama was completely unspectacular and unspecial in the front four last year. And this year they are extremely special. And it's vice versa. Auburn was just outstanding offensive line last year, and this year certainly not a bad offensive line, but they just don't have that same dominant group, including the H-back Jay Prosh, who moved on, where they're just able to halfback dive you for 6 or 7 yards at will. When they were able to do that last year, it opened up everything about their offense. opponents. Defensive ends and outside linebackers were nervous to set the edge because they had to cheat in to stop that dive play. And it's, if you take one false step when you're supposed to be setting the edge, Nick Marshall is a great athlete and he can get the edge. And they're not opposing defenses are not having to cheat in like that anymore because they're not just getting blown up by the halfback dive. So when you factor that in, the fact that Auburn's offensive line is not as good as last year and Alabama's front four is worlds better. They have war daddies up there in Jaren Reed and A'shaun Robinson. Now, A'shaun Robinson played last year, but he's a year older, a year better, and he's not the only stud that we have on the defensive line now. They go eight deep. They have linebackers they can rotate in. I think that that's been Auburn's problem all year, and we say problem. I mean, they're 8-3. They're a good team, but that's why they have not looked like the Auburn of last year is because teams don't have to sell out to stop those halfback dive plays, and you're not leaving single coverage every single play on those huge, fast wide receivers. You're not letting them get the edge on the jet sweep or on the keep with Nick Marshall. So from that standpoint, I feel better about the matchup for Alabama this year, and of course all the motivation in the world to win this game. The one thing that makes me incredibly nervous, and we talked about it with the Florida State Florida game, Auburn really doesn't have anything to lose here. And if there's one coach in America who I don't want to play when he has nothing to lose, it's Gus Malzahn. I was going to say I'm going to be really disappointed if Florida doesn't run at least three trick plays against Florida State. And if I'm Auburn, I have the exact same mindset. You are pulling out all the stops to ruin your most hated rival's season when they're still playing for everything and all you're hoping for is a New Year's Day bowl or something. That makes me incredibly nervous, almost more so than if Auburn had not lost to Georgia or to A&M. You know, we're coming in with two losses and we're still alive to win the West. The fact that I think they are going to be loose, free, easy, and one of the shortcomings in the Saban era, and there are not many, and this isn't even a shortcoming because they've beaten Auburn more than they've lost, but they have played tight in some of these Auburn games where Alabama has something on the line. You saw it last year. You saw it in 09 when they actually wound up winning the game. You saw it the Cam Newton year. They came out loose, but then they got tight as the game went on. And Auburn seems to be a little more loose and free and easy, and that will certainly be the case this year when they don't really have anything to lose. So, I'm nervous. I think it's going to be a close game. I would not predict a blowout, but I do think Alabama's going to find a way to win this one.
Thank you, gentlemen. That wasn't as bad as I was expecting. I'm going to take Alabama as well, and I'm going to just say go back 2 weeks ago and see what Georgia did to Auburn, and that's Alabama's mindset as well. We said all along, all season, that Georgia was going to seek some revenge for that play that happened at the end of the game against them last year against Auburn, and Alabama is going to try to do the same thing again this year, and I see it happening. Auburn, like you said, might be pulling out all the stops to try to keep that from happening, but as much as I think Mississippi State deserves to possibly go to that Final Four, I think they're going to be on the outside looking in because Alabama's going to win this game. I like at least 10 points. I'm like you, Nick. I like that line. It's pretty high, and I'm comfortable with that, but that's just me. I've been wrong before.
And one other thing I was going to mention, we didn't talk about this, but Nick Saban held out a couple guys. He held out DeAndre White and T.J. Yeldon. And, I mean, if there's one thing that I've been disappointed with in Alabama, I mean, with all the things that Kiffin's brought, it's been really disconcerting. It hasn't lost Alabama any games, except, well, maybe the Ole Miss game. But it's been a little disconcerting not being able to run the ball when we've had to. I mean, even with, third and three, third and four situations, a lot of times you're seeing screen plays, flares, all this stuff, trying to pick up a first down with Amari Cooper or crossing patterns when normally we could just run it down the other team's throat. So if there is a game that I would like to see Alabama establish a little bit of a running game, especially with T.J. Yeldon being held out last week and Derrick Henry getting all the carries. I mean, that's something I want to see, and that's something that I think should be interesting, because Auburn is built much more as kind of like we were talking about with Missouri, as a kind of speed pass rush kind of team, with, you know, missing Carl Lawson, but President and Marcavius Adams and a bunch of those guys on the inside for them. So I don't know. I wanted to bring that up because Yeldon was held out. So it's going to be a little disconcerting if Alabama can't run the ball with him with hopefully fresh legs.
Well, I want to wish everyone a wonderful holiday weekend. Safe travels. We hope you get to listen to this on your travels. You know, maybe it'll make your drive go a little quicker. And now that you've finished listening to this and you're hearing my voice now, you've already wasted another hour and a half down the road. So you're that much closer to your destination. But we've got a lot of great football that kicks off in less than 48 hours from when we're recording this. This will get out tomorrow, so you guys will have this for your travels. We thank you guys so much for listening in to SEC Sports Roundtable. We will call this podcast done.